Welcome to Ray and Tay Today.
Hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today on this Wednesday. And I'm Ray Tal Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. And it is April 17th, the last day of the NBA season. Woo! Kind of hyped up. So you want to give us a call, join us, and Ray will break down the show for you. 718-664-9098. You can always email us at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You know, tweet at us. Get them likes on Facebook at Ray and Tay Today. And also check out the interactive website. We've got poll questions, photos, standings for MLB and NBA, mock drafts for football and for the NBA as well at rayandtaytoday.com. You'll have a lot of fun. And listen to old episodes, too. Right, Ray? You know, like the baseball preview with Bob Brenly. You know, we got a name
got
drop sometimes. You know?
For you. Yeah.
That's right. We've had some big guests.
Sure. We had Seth Davis from CBS. We had Jeff Zilgit from USA Today. We had George Reister, former NFL tight end, Oregon Ducks, in the house. We had Al Troutwig, the famous announcer from the New York City area, covering the Knicks, the Nets, the Rangers, all
Olympics,
the New York sports,
NBC,
Olympics,
everything.
Tour de France. So, yeah, we got a lot of back episodes. So come check us out on our site on rayandtaytoday.com. It's a very entertaining site. It's also interactive, so you can send us emails. You can send us suggestions, anything that you want to talk about because we talk sports with friends. So be interactive with us. We love it. We've got emails backed up. We've got some polls we do. So stick with us, listen to the show, and come join us on any of our multimedia outlets. We touch you everywhere. We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we've got our website. However you want to get in touch with us, get in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let them know how the show's breaking down, man.
All right, so we've got a very special guest today. We've got David Shaw, the head coach of the Stanford Cardinal. And what a head coaching job this guy's done the last couple of years. He is the son of a former NFL coach. We'll get into a little bit of his background and what he's done so far, but he's going to join us about midway through the show. So we'll start
NFL
the show
player,
off.
Really sure.
Yeah, NFL player's son. He himself was a player at Stanford for 4 years. Actually played on the basketball team too, track, great athlete. So before that, we'll start with our normal breaking news segment. We'll go around the world of sports. We have a passing in the world of sports that we need to go over. We'll talk about some in and out of the NBA draft, some surprises, people staying, people going. Then, on the last day of the season, we'll talk about the NFL playoff race. The West is really the wild, wild West. So the 1 and 2 seeds are set, but everything else is up in the air. 3 through 9 are up in the air tonight. So that's very exciting. We'll get into that. We'll talk a little bit about the last game of the season, the potential matchups in the playoffs. Then we'll be joined by David Shaw, like we said, the head football coach at Stanford. We'll talk Stanford football. We'll talk Pac-12 football. We'll talk NFL draft. And then we'll finish up with our own Ray and Tay discussion of the NFL draft. We'll talk a little bit about what's happening in the NFL, what teams need, what teams are looking for. The draft is a week away, Tay. Are you ready?
I'm very ready, man. I'm hyped up. It's going to be exciting. Let's get into it, man. We go around the dial and talk about some news. The first thing we got to mention is an RIP to the legendary player and broadcaster. Old school folks know him as a player. Us young guys that grew up with him, we really know him as a broadcaster. Pat Summerall passed away at 82. And, I mean, what else can you say? I mean, you know, we know he did about 20 years with John Madden, but he was the voice at CBS, at Fox when they switched over. And really, him and Madden helped develop that Fox network when they first got the NFL on Fox, and it really established, you know, the whole Fox channel, and he was the voice of that, the play-by-play voice. Classy gentleman, never gave you too much information, let the game breathe, juxtaposed to John Madden. He was sort of perfect with Madden, you know, super personality and gimmicks and antics and just all the flubbering and blubbering. Pat Summerall just summed it up in a couple of words, gave it to you, and it was like a solid, quick little meal, you know?
Yeah, that team
R.I.P.
was pretty good
yeah.
at together. So whoever
Amazing.
Casted them and put them together, kudos to them. But also remember John Madden with that voice. We remember him as football, but if you go back in the archives, he also did the Masters and the U.S. Open in tennis for 20 years. So John Madden Pat Summerall was one of those announcers, right? He's one of those guys
Definitely.
That was so versatile that he could do everything. Of course, his biggest splash was the NFL. But this guy
sort of like
really,
Jim Nance is now. Jim Nance is sort of like the next version of him, of Pat Summerall. That's how Nance is kind of.
Right, golf, tennis. I guess Dick Enberg is the only other guy. Because the two sports you think that don't really go are golf and football. But apparently, you know, if you've got the skills, you've got the skills. But the good thing about Pat Summerall is that nobody – look, whenever somebody passes, everybody talks about the good and the positive about that person. But it really seems like genuinely everybody had a ton of respect for this guy. And they say nothing but good things about him as a gentleman. He had some issues with drinking and Betty Ford and whatever. So he had some issues in his personal life. But in terms of how he was as a person and how people in the industry viewed him and how he was perceived, nothing but great things to say about Pat Summerall. So rest in peace from Ray and Tay. We certainly enjoyed a good 20, 30-year run listening to you and have nothing but great memories of Pat Summerall, especially during football on Sundays.
A legend, definitely, definitely a legend. So listen, man, I'm kind of excited. I mean, you know, we're Tar Heel fans. We'll talk a little bit about the NBA draft and move-ins and goings. Our man, James Michael McAdoo, is coming back for his junior season. And with this year's recruiting class, I like how the Tar Heels will look next year. I'm kind of excited about that. And personally for him, you know, he started to really develop nicely the last 12 games of the season. And I think coming back to North Carolina instead of going to the NBA is a smart move for him.
I agree 100%. And in fact, people are saying nowadays, if you stay till your junior year in college, then something's wrong, then you're not good enough. But there is something to be said for working on your game and getting better while you can learn at the college level, because you can't really learn too much at the NBA level. They cut back on practices, and the season is so long with the 82 games plus the, you know, 10 or 15 preseason games and training camp, and you don't really get that instruction. So work on your game, stay in college, and come out when you're ready. So I love the James Michael McAdoo decision to come back, and hopefully next year he can come out and dominate the ACC and get himself a top 10 positioning in the 2014 draft.
Yeah, you would hope so, and it should be interesting to see. And I don't know if it's official yet, but it looks like someone who could have been probably a top 3 pick, Marcus Smart, the guard from Oklahoma State, looks like he might be returning to college. That's pretty interesting to me, and I guess we'll stay tuned and get the official word on that one. I've got to believe that he would come out. But if not, kudos to him, and, you know, wish him well and hope he, you know,
you can't ever be mad at somebody who comes back to college, especially because we keep saying work on your game, A, and B, you know, maybe even more importantly, develop as a person, as a man, and enjoy the college experience, because once you go pro, you can never recapture that college experience. So good for him. Now, on the other side of that token is Tim Hardaway Jr., who announced that he's leaving Michigan. So the floodgates are opening, right? Trey Burke's leaving, Hardaway Jr.'s leaving. We have yet to hear from Robinson. But it looks like that Michigan team is going to lose a lot of talent.
Yeah, that's
that's to be expected. When you go to the national finals, you know, it's very rare that you get a situation like we had in 05-06 with the Florida Gators, where all those guys came back, won a national championship, and then came back the next year. That's the exception. Nowadays, if you go 4 or 5 games into the tournament, you get a lot of public, you know, exposure and accolades, you're going to go pro.
I think he's got a decent game, you know. I don't know if Glenn Robinson is announced as well, did he? But, you know,
no,
to
I
me,
so.
Yeah, so, you know, they still have a couple, you know, a couple days before they have to, I think it's April 28th, before they have to declare. And I think that's holding up, you know, what's going on with Andrew Wiggins in terms of him deciding where he wants to play. He's still between North Carolina, Florida State, and Kentucky. And so, you know, I think it's all, you know, sort of connected in a domino effect. So I'll be interested to see how, you know, all of this plays out. But for me, you know, you're interested to see who comes out, but then you hope that, you know, they start going, you know, Portsmouth, you know, I know Larry Drew Jr. was at Portsmouth, and then they have the different camps in Chicago. So these guys are really, just like the NFL, you know, combine, they got to start working on their game. And, you know, really trying to improve and get things together and ready for the next level. So, you know, kudos to him. I know in the NFL we got some stuff going on. It looks like the Jets are probably going to re-sign Calvin Pace. So that should be kind of interesting. I don't know what you'd think about this whole Jet team. And then even with Revis, what do you think about them talking about they're kind of backtracking? You know, it seems like now I don't know, maybe it will be harder for them to trade him. So it seems like now the language of, you know, coming out of the Jet camp is a little nicer. You know, like we're reevaluating this and that, and he's healthy, he's ahead of schedule. I don't know. That's
you never know. These NFL teams are so sophisticated in terms of smoke screens and sending signals, and maybe they're just trying to pump up his value, or maybe they're just trying to pump up his ego, thinking we're stuck with this guy for 1 year, so we might as well get the best year we can out of him. So I never really take, especially what they say in April, I never really take what GMs say too seriously, because I know a lot of it is strategic and maneuvering.
Yeah, well, you know who's going to take something real serious from a GM? Clay Matthews signs a $65 million extension with the Green Bay Packers. Ooh, I take that also very serious.
Yeah, so now they got to sign Aaron Rodgers for double that money. So they've got two big checks to write.
Oh, right. That's, yeah. I'm always blown away, but, you know, I like to hear, like, what I heard from Matthew Stafford, the quarterback for the Lions. He said, look, I'm going to get paid. I want to get paid, but I don't want to be around a team that doesn't have good players. I don't want to break the bank. You know, I don't need extra money. You know, just give me something that's fair, and I'm going to stay here in Detroit, and I want to be able to have a quality team around me. I thought that was pretty encouraging to hear that coming out of, you know, the quarterback position and the leader of the Lions. If you're a Detroit fan, like some of our callers are, like Nick who calls in, you got to be pretty happy about that, you know.
And yeah,
definitely got to be
in a salary capped environment where the cap has been steady last year, and this notion that Aaron Rodgers might get $25 million when the next highest paid quarterback gets 20, so you're thinking, can't we just pay him 20 and a half, 21, and put that other $4 million into keeping a Greg Jennings or keeping, you know, a tight end or an offensive lineman to protect him or somebody on defense, a pass rusher on defense? So it's tough. It's tough because, you know, Joe Flacco went through this. He basically signed for his big money deal, which meant that they needed to do some maneuvering. Now, they ended up having Elvis Dumervil fall in their lap. But they had to make some maneuvers. They had to let some people go. They had to clear up cap space to get Joe Flacco signed. And to sign him to a long-term deal, you know, meant losing some other people, Kruger and some others, so Allerby. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. But the Green Bay Packers, they've pretty much said, look, we're going to lock down our offensive captain and our defensive captain and let the chips, you know, fall where they may.
Yeah. So as we get ready to get into the NBA real quick, Rasheed Wallace officially retired, so the Knicks could have a roster spot. In the last 2 days, they signed Earl Barron, and then they released who the player they just signed a couple, you know, last week, Solomon Jones, and signed Quentin Richardson, who looks real good and, is going to play tonight coming off the bench. So, teams are making some signings. You know, Mayo says he wants to come back to Dallas. McGrady signs with the Spurs. Tracy McGrady, the legendary player who was playing in China, and Dwayne Jones signs with the Warriors. So with all that, are you ready to talk the last night in the NBA, Ray? It's on. I mean, the game is on ESPN. The Western Conference is a hot topic. Utah against Memphis.
It
matters for Memphis, too, but... Yeah, I mean, well, what are you thinking? I mean, do you think...
Look, I love it. I love the fact that...
The last day.
Game 82 of 82. And in the Western Conference, we only have seeds 1 and 2 locked up. 3
That's
nice. 9 can change just on one game. That's how crazy the Western Conference is. I love it. It's so great. The Clippers can be the third seed. Denver could be the third seed, and they could be playing the sixth seed, who is most likely Golden State. They control their own destiny, but it could easily be Houston if Golden State loses and Houston wins. Oh, and by the way, Houston could easily be the eighth seed just if they lose to the Lakers. And the Lakers could be seven, but the Lakers could be nine. The Lakers could be seven or nine, and they can't be eight. They could be seven or nine. I guess they can be eight. They can be seven, eight, or nine.
Yeah, if Utah loses.
Utah can be eight or nine. So,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, nine doesn't matter, right? You're nine, you're done. And I think what's really fascinating, obviously one and two are set in the West, but everything else is up for play. You know, at least for Denver, right? At least they're like, hey, we're at home. They're up on Phoenix 11-4. So they're like, we control... They're like, we're at home. We don't lose at home. We lost three times at home, so we're going to solidify that. I think when you look at the East, the only thing that's in play tonight is Atlanta and the 5-6 seed. So the Knicks are up on the Hawks. They're winning 6-2 at MSG. So if Atlanta loses and the Bulls win, then the Bulls will play and the 5 seed against the Brooklyn Nets.
Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, so that will be kind of interesting. The Bulls are also up and at home, 8-0 against the Washington Wizards. So, so here we go. I mean, and I think Friday, we'll have our NBA preview. We'll give out our awards for the season, they match some of our predictions for the season, especially with the Lillard. Damian Lillard, but we'll definitely give you, but kudos to him because he's got a bunch of guys there who were injured, and I know you were talking about Portland the other day on the show, but the one thing with that streak of losing 11, I guess it's now 12, they had a lot of guys injured. Matthews and Batum have been out, but that team puts a bad taste in your mouth because they give up the most points in the post out of any team in the NBA. And I put that on Hickson and I guess a little bit of LaMarcus. Myers Leonard is young. I mean, Portland, they got to do something. And it's a shame Odin didn't work out, right? What do they do now? What's their next move for the Portland Trailblazers, which is, I don't know.
Well, they're back in the lottery, although this is a weak year in the draft. So we'll see.
Maybe an Alex Lem or Zeller falls to them and you take a shot, right?
Yeah, they do need some size, and remember, they had Prisbilla, they had Greg Oden, they had Debo, they had Zach Randolph. I mean, they've had some people go through there over the last five or 6 years.
Yeah.
But, one more thing with the NBA. Steph Curry needs two threes to break Ray Allen's record for threes made in a season. So this
Incredible.
Guy is not an all-star, which we had a debate about this, and I said in theory he's an all-star, but in practice you got to drop somebody. So who are you going to drop?
I was fighting for him. I thought he should have been on the team.
Right, but unless you go with
extra
guard, you couldn't drop Westbrook, you couldn't drop Kobe, you couldn't drop Harden, you couldn't drop Tony Parker. So even though he's an all-star by stats and by what he does for Golden State, I just couldn't see how you get him on that team. But the point is, he
probably
might
over LaMarcus. I mean, you're looking at Portland and that team. You know, you probably, you know, because remember, Golden State had a better record at that time than Portland. You know, so
right,
I think that would have been
the place.
But.
For a, you know, for a big, and so that's a philosophical issue. You know, do you want to carry six guards, or was it, would it be five or six guards on that All-Star roster?
Yeah, it'd been six, yeah. Well, you know what? Hey, tonight, you could set the record in Portland. Poetic justice, baby. The sports gods never get it wrong, Ray.
That's perfect. Think about this, though. Think about Steph Curry will hit the most threes in NBA history. Trivia note for all you basketball buffs out there. The first three, they put the three-point line in the NBA in 79, and Chad Ford, the old coach for the Celtics, hit the first three. But Steph Curry, your all-time leader, just needs two. And the other thing we didn't talk about, of course, is Carmelo Anthony at 28.7 points per game. Looks like he's going to win the scoring title because he may or may not play tonight. But even if he doesn't play, well, we can check and see if he's playing. But Kevin Durant's not playing. So Kevin Durant would have needed 70 points, and it would have been great to see him try to get 70 to win the scoring title. But he decided not to, and so Carmelo Anthony, who is not in the lineup tonight, wins the scoring title at 28-7, the first Knick to win the scoring title since Bernard King did it in 84-85 at 32-9 a game. So that's great. That's great for all those Knick fans out there. So, Tay, looks like we might have some technical difficulties here with Tay. But going around the NBA, looks like we've got a heck of a playoffs coming up. And it's about, you know, it's about surviving and advancing in the NBA playoffs. And that Western Conference looks like it's going to be nice and juicy. So, without further ado, I think that this Western Conference looks like it's going to be a crazy, crazy matchup there between, especially in the second round. I mean, if you figure that the Lakers might win and, you know, get that 8 seed, the Lakers, either at the 8 seed, probably won't give much, won't put up much of a fight against Oklahoma City. But if they're in the 7 and they get to play San Antonio, now that's a big deal because they can easily give San Antonio a run for the money and potentially win in 6 or 7 games because San Antonio is banged up and they've got plenty of problems with health and depth. They had to get rid of Steven Jackson. Boris Diaw had back surgery. So they've got plenty of issues with their health, their front court, and also Tony Parker. His ankle's not right. And because his ankle's not right, that team doesn't run, and they're not as effective without Tony Parker. So in the Eastern Conference, you know, we talked a little bit about that 4-5 matchup, which looks like it might be Brooklyn against Chicago. And Chicago has Brooklyn's number. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out with those two teams. And then, you know, the Knicks and the Celtics at 2-7. Yeah, we're here. Knicks and Celtics at 2-7. Look like they're going to be a nice little matchup. Tay, you there? Hello? Looks like we're having some technical difficulties with Tay on the line. But continuing with the Eastern Conference, Miami will probably take care of Milwaukee really quickly. It looks like that will probably be a 4-0 or a 4-1 series. The Indiana-Atlanta series, you know, Atlanta might win a game or two, but it looks like it will be Indiana and maybe Chicago or the Brooklyn-Chicago advancing, the Knicks advancing, maybe Miami advancing. So if the top 4 or 5 seeds hold then you're looking like a Chicago-Miami potential matchup in that second round, and then Knicks-Indiana.
Now, there we go. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened, man.
You back with us, Tay?
Yeah, you know what happened? I've got to tell you.
Oh, you're breaking up.
Storm.
You're breaking up.
Windstorm. You hear me?
Yeah, so, Tay, you're breaking up. You got a bad connection there.
Yeah, crazy windstorm in Arizona. I don't know if you can hear me.
No, I barely hear you.
Okay, yeah, it's a crazy windstorm. I'll call back.
Okay. So, what do you guys think about the NBA playoffs? Send us your comments. Send us your emails. Call into the show. It looks like this Western Conference is set to be a real interesting battle. If everything holds to form, let's say the Lakers are, like we said, let's say the Lakers beat Houston tonight, and the Lakers are 7, and Houston is 8. So you've got James Harden going into Oklahoma City, to his former home team and the former Lions Den. Yeah, we're here.
All right, cool.
You're still breaking up, though.
Yeah, it's just the weather. But go ahead. I heard what you were saying. I mean, to me, you know, we'll finish your thoughts.
Yeah, so the Western Conference shapes up to have some interesting subnotes, right? So you've got, let's say, if Houston is 8, Houston will go to Oklahoma City. And they will play, you know, James Harden will go back home. Now, he won't be scared. He'll definitely be ready to play his old team. And then, like we said, if the Lakers win that game and they end up being 7, then they would play San Antonio, a banged-up San Antonio team, especially in the front court. And that's where Gasol and Dwight Howard have a, you know, huge advantage, because Tim Duncan is playing basically with Tiago Splitter. And that's it. You know, their front court with D.L. going down and Steven Jackson going down, they had to run out and sign Tracy McGrady, which is no, you know, it's a sign of desperation.
The Lakers have a shot,
for sure. And then Golden State against Denver, like we said, those are two similar teams in the fact that they have offensive philosophies that are up and down the court. Denver has that, you know, that no-star philosophy where they don't really have one go-to player. Losing Danilo Gallinari probably hurts them, and they might not get out of the first round. Even though they get a third seed, they might not get out of the first round. Even though they have a great home court advantage, Golden State might give them all they can handle, assuming they even keep that three seed. You know, the Clippers are breathing down their neck. And then 4-5 matchup between the Clippers and Memphis. Wow, that's a heck of a matchup. You know, we keep saying these are two up-and-coming teams in the Western Conference, and those two teams, when they play each other, one of them's going home. So they probably both think that they're legitimate second- and third-round playoff teams, but unfortunately one of them's going to go home. And like Ray and Tay both said, we thought that the Rudy Gay trade from Memphis' perspective was a downgrade, especially when it comes to the playoffs. That athleticism, that 6'8 forward that can get his own shot and can, you know, really impact the game on offense and on defense when he plays, obviously. You know, we think Memphis is going to be a little bit weaker going into the playoffs. And that Clipper team,
from Memphis,
you know,
it's all about defense. And I think that they're going to have to be able to, you know, Tony Allen matching up against CP3, and he shut him down, but they don't have Rudy Gay, like you were saying, to sort of stop Ron Butler. You know, it's not the same team, and I really just think the Clippers are really, you know, and we'll talk more about it on Friday. I think the Clippers are going to have, you know, such a big advantage with that. It's all going to come down to the post play, right? Those four guys, Jordan and Griffin against, you know, Gasol and Randolph. But, you know, I'm definitely excited about it. I think the playoffs itself are going to be amazing, and tonight we'll see how everything runs. But, you know, let's start the head some football talk, as I think our guests will be joining us shortly. The NFL draft, you know, it's going to be exciting. I think that, you know, people are seeing movement and who's going to do what.
we have our guest. I think we have our guest calling now.
Yeah.
So we'll patch our guest in.
Yeah, definitely. I think that NFL draft is going to be amazing, and tomorrow night the schedule is released. So football fans are totally excited right now. You've got to be.
Yeah. So I'm trying to patch him in. Looks like we might have some technical difficulties. Why don't you try to patch him in too?
Okay. There we go. Hello?
Hello? This is Coach Shaw. So anyway, let's keep talking while the control panel punches him in. So we've got the NFL draft a week away. We've got four, five Pac-12 players projected to be first-round picks. And obviously I'm excited about this NFL draft. Maybe the first time that we don't have an elite quarterback, you know, in the last few years coming out. So we've got possibly 2-3 quarterbacks in the first round or two, but this isn't a quarterback-heavy draft like it was last year or even the year before, where you had, you know, several quarterbacks going in the first half of the first round.
No, I agree with you, and we'll see. There's rumors now that Geno Smith, and we'll have to ask David Shaw about this. Hopefully he'll be joining us any second. David, are you there? No, but I think the Buffalo Bills could easily take a risk and a shot and might even, you know, go for Geno Smith, which could be really interesting. I think the offensive linemen are going to really sort of dictate the draft and how they play out, along with, you know, some of the Pac-12 guys like, you know, the Jordan and guys like that, but I'm really excited. I think we're going to get some surprises. There'll definitely be some trades.
Well, and, you know who's climbing up the draft board is Deion Jordan, this kid from Oregon who was projected as, you know, possibly a first rounder, but after the combine and after people took a second look at the pro day and at everything he's done, now he's, some people are projecting him to go as high as number two. So this guy's really shot up
pick.
The draft board.
Right, that Jaguar pick, we're not too sure where they're going to go with it. You know, that's the one pick, I think. You know, Jaguars and Raiders, you know, you're not too sure. Hold on, let's see. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, sorry, folks. It looks like we have some technical difficulties here with the with the control panel. We're trying to get our guest in. I think he's on the line. We're trying to patch him
in. He's definitely on the line. You know, you might have to go bring him in on three-way. Maybe you give him a call through three-way. And we apologize. David Shaw is on hold with us, the great Stanford coach from the Pac-12 who will be covering the NFL draft with the NFL Network. Should be exciting. Him, Brian Kelly, two other coaches will be there as
well.
Here we
go. I think we have him. Is this Coach Shaw?
Yes.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for calling. This is Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but thanks for joining the show.
Hey, no problem. No problem at all.
Hey,
all right,
Coach
great.
Shaw. This is Eric Taylor. Tay, thank you for joining us. And listen, we'll jump right into it. Ray, why don't you go ahead and let's get the coach, let's get him fired up.
Yeah, well, first of all, congrats on a great 2012 season, going 12-2 and 8-1 in the Pac-12. You know, what we wanted to know is we're from afar. You know, we followed the Stanford program since, you know, the John Elway days, and obviously, you know, it's a great program, but it seems like you're building something special and maybe continuing on, you know, what your predecessor Harbaugh did there, but what makes the Stanford program you're building and the student-athletes that you're recruiting so unique? I mean, you're getting people, great talent from all over the country, but seems like you're building something special over there in Palo Alto.
I think you're right. It is special. It's a different place, and getting into school here is difficult, and you have to find the right young men that have the aptitude academically to get in and do well here. And but once kids get here, this place is unbelievable with helping these guys understand what kind of school this is, helping them find what they want to study, and doing well in it. And you combine that with guys that we try to find guys that are ultra-competitive. They're tough-minded individuals. So we play tight games, we play tough games, and these guys don't falter. They fight to the end. And you get kids that are really, really smart that will fight to the end, but it's because it's chance I'd be a winner.
That's great. Now, you just finished up your Cardinal and White game, and what do you think about your season coming up? What do you think about this 2013 campaign for Stanford?
Well, you know, first and foremost, when you talk about us right now, you got to talk about the defense. And Trent Murphy, Shane Scove, those guys are going to be All-Americans and high-round draft picks, big physical guys that can run. But look at our defense also. We probably have 7 or 8 guys that are going to play in the NFL. You know, Ed Reynolds led college football last year in interceptor turn yards. Jordan Richardson is fast and explosive also. You know, we've got a lot of guys that can play in a lot of different positions. So it starts with us on defense. Kevin Hogan made a big splash last year when we made the quarterback change. He's a big athletic kid, smart kid, 6'3", 220, strong arm, can really move, didn't turn the ball over very much. We're finally healthy at the receiver position. We've got some speed. We lost our 2 big tight ends, but hopefully our receivers can pick up where those guys left off. And last on top of that, we've got a really, really good cast of running backs that we believe that we're going to use a kind of a running back by committee deal there. But that's a positive for us because all those guys are talented.
Well, David, that sounds fantastic, man, because that leads me, you know, perfectly to the spot. I mean, I know you're going to be with the NFL Network and you'll be giving your insights, I'm sure, with your players going to the NFL this year, some of the Pac-12 players and the rest of the nation. So just give us a little insight how you sort of prepare for that, for working on the NFL Network, and what you think about your guys, obviously, Zach Ertz and Taylor, who I think are fantastic, but the Pac, just a little insight also as well to the Pac-12 guys that you think will probably go high in the draft.
First and foremost, I love the NFL draft. I always have. When I worked for the Oakland Raiders, and love him or hate him, the great Mr. Al Davis, the draft was his passion. And if you're going to work at the Raiders, you're going to study the draft, because the worst feeling in the world would be for Mr. Al Davis to ask you a question and you not have an answer. So, I mean, I can't describe that feeling and the words that were said in that room, but you had that feeling, you know, I'm going to prepare. So I learned to prepare for the draft. I was there for 4 years, and you have to have a passion for it. And the draft is so full of hope. Everybody has so much hope and high expectations, and you're looking at adding guys to your team that fit what you do. So I've always had that passion for the draft. I have no desire right now to go back and coach the NFL. But I love the draft, and the NFL Network people have been great with me. They send me a ton of material that I have to sift through. Thankfully, I'm not like, you know, Mike Mayock and those guys. I don't have to know everybody. I specialize in our conference.
And Mayock is great. He's great.
Oh, gosh, those guys are unbelievably talented. But I just know the guys that we've played against, our guys on our team, make sure I look at them, and from not just from a college coach's perspective, but from an NFL coach's perspective and a draft perspective. You know, you look at guys like Deion Jordan. You guys were talking about Deion Jordan a while ago. Here's a guy that, when you look at him, is probably a little undersized, not as strong as he needs to be, coming off of a shoulder issue, but you're looking at a guy that can change a game. You know, he can get to the quarterback. He's so fast and so explosive. Not too different than the original freak from Florida that went to the Tennessee Titans, and Javon Kurz.
Yeah, Javon Kurz. Sure.
And Javon, same thing. He's too long. He's too tall. He's not big enough. Next thing you know, he's in the Pro Bowl for the next 7 years. So
measurables. Yeah, in the measurables.
Oh, yeah. The measurables are awful. It's always about the film. You know, sometimes the measurables can back up the film. And you'd love when those two things coincide, because I think they do for Deion. When Deion was healthy, you see him run that 4-4. You see him turn the corner on really good tackles. You see him run down quarterbacks and running backs. And you, that's what you want. That's what we talk about, guys who get drafted high. The guys that get drafted high are the guys that do the things that you can't coach. And that's kind of what Deion Jordan is.
So break down for us real quick. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you knew and you were – we were all blown away and impressed by Andrew Luck and what he did his first year in the NFL and that whole rookie class. But what everybody this year is talking about the quarterbacks. And, you know, I just kind of want your assessment, I mean, as a coach and someone who's coached on both levels and just your knowledge of the game, how do you look at Geno Smith, Manuel, and Matt Barkley, those three guys? How do you break them down, and what are your thoughts of their future careers?
That's the question. The thing for me, with them, it's two questions for both, and I'll probably say this on air next week as well. There's two questions. The first question is, can they play? For me, all three of them, yes. They're all going to play. They're all going to be good NFL players. I honestly believe that. The question is, how good and how high do you take them? Because just like I said before, in order to take a guy high, you're going to invest a significant amount of money and time in this guy. You can't cut him. You're not going to get release him for 3 to 4 years. You're going to pay him. He's going to be a guy that you're counting on. He's got to be able to do some things that you can't coach. And that's the hard part. And the great Ozzie Newsome referred to it as a dominant trait. Those guys have to have at least one dominant trait for you to take them that high. And is Geno Smith's athletic ability and arm strength, is that enough? Is Matt Barkley's experience and intelligence and being a great in that West Coast system, is that enough to say that's a dominant trait? And that's what those teams have to ask. E.J. Manuel, 6'5", athlete, strong arm. Are those things that you consider a dominant trait? And I think all three of those guys are going to be the eye of the beholder, because you can make cases for and against all of them, which to me causes some concern about drafting them really high. Now, if they fall to you and you're talking about mid to late first round, I think to take all those guys, any of those guys, I feel good about it. But to take those guys really high up in the draft, you got to take somebody who's got something that's a dominant trait that you look at and say, I have to have this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your coaching philosophy. So just changing gears a little bit, you've been around some great coaches, obviously, as a player and then as an assistant coach. And then, you know, obviously, you know, you start with Dennis Green and Bill Walsh when you started at Stanford, and then, you know, coaching under Jim Harbaugh and then taking over for him, and then Belichick, and you said Al Davis with the Raiders. So how do you mold all of that, you know, everybody's philosophy into your own and create your own philosophy when you run your program and, you know, put your stamp today on the Stanford program? And then in general, as a coach, and especially as a young coach, you know, you have your own philosophy, but you've obviously been influenced by everybody else. So let us know what that process is like for you.
The thing for me, I learned at an early age, my dad gave me one piece of advice right before I took my first coaching job, and he just said, coach to your personality. You know, it's what you always tell your children, you tell people you work with, you tell people your friends, you know, be yourself. Be yourself, because when you're yourself, you use your own voice, your own words, and people take you as sincere, and everything comes across better when you're just being yourself. So that's first and foremost. It sounds really simple, but that's the biggest thing. The second thing is steal everything you can from everybody that you experience, and that's what I've done. I've said it flat out, and I'm not bashful about it whatsoever. I mean, we're running a version of John Gruden's offense here. It has been since we've gotten here. Bill Walsh's ideals and his mentalities, when I played for him, I've taken a lot of those. Denny Green's enthusiasm and desire never to be discounted. I mean, that got Denny going anytime he thought that somebody was looking down on us, and that got us going. Jim Harbaugh's unbelievable, relentless attitude to compete with everybody. And I think you take bits and pieces from all Brian Billick, organizational structure, I thought was phenomenal. The way that he and Ozzie Newsome worked together when I was at Baltimore, I think that's something I tried to emulate as well, as far as how our relationships go on our staff and who does what and when and why and how. And those things are all important. And whenever you see anything that somebody else does well, talk to them, steal it as best you can, and try to emulate it and make it work for you.
Yeah, that's great. One more question about the Pac-12. What is your, as a coach in the conference, see, we're big basketball and football guys, and we sort of say, okay, these conferences are being reshaped largely on the back of football. So is this affecting you? What do you think about the Pac-10 becoming the Pac-12 and then all these conferences growing and becoming these mega conferences? Has this had any effect on you, and do you have any thoughts on that?
I do, and I try to take a long view and say, where is all this going? Where is all this going? And once again, I'm a nine-year NFL coaching veteran, okay? I'm used to everybody's in a conference, everybody's in a division within the conference. We get to the point where we play everybody in some round-robin deal. We all play on a similar playing field. We have a playoff. We eventually have a champion. So for me, once all of these conferences are aligned and everybody kind of finally gets a seat around the table, for me, it makes sense a few years from now to say, okay, you know what, now let's set up a real round-robin, at least 18 playoff, and everybody, and not like it is now where the Pac-12 plays nine and some conferences play eight conference games and some people play 10, and now get everybody the same rules, get everybody a level playing field, let the NCAA or somebody handle a lot of the scheduling so that it can be even and fair, and you can walk out of every college football season and know who the champion is.
Amen. Yeah, we agree wholeheartedly.
So I'm having some technical difficulties. We've got a bad windstorm.
Oh, he's got a bad connection. So what, now, you're the two-time Pac-12 Coach of the Year, and 23-4. You know, where do you go from here? I mean, you've got the, obviously, when you're recruiting, you're telling people, what are you telling them, that your number one goal is to win the Pac-12 and then have a shot at the national championship? Is that kind of the aspirational element of your, you know, preseason talk and getting everybody's expectations aligned and shooting for a national championship?
What we talk about is every year being one of the best teams in the nation. We never put all of our eggs in one basket and say, we got to win a championship this year, we got to do this. I think we let people know we're the one team ever that happened this year that went to a BCS bowl game at the same time winning a national academic award for 100% APR. So for us, it's about being the best in college football academically and being amongst the best in college football on the playing field, because we think that there's really no one else that does it as well as we do, and we want to do that every single year, so that's our emphasis, and we'll go to bowl games, we'll do great, we'll produce NFL talent, but we'll also produce great citizens, great businessmen, et cetera, and to continue to be that one separate, different university that plays football here at Stanford.
You know, that's great, and I feel like not enough schools either have the will or the capability or the desire, frankly, to do what you guys are doing. So definitely, you know, hats off to you and to the folks at Stanford, and, you know, I guess it starts from the administration and filters down through the athletics department. But it's, you know, that's the ultimate college athletics, right? Striving for excellence both in the classroom, citizenship, and obviously on the, you know, on the football field. What do you think it takes What do you think it takes for a university to make that commitment? I mean, why aren't we seeing more schools doing that? It's hard, right? Exactly.
It's hard nowadays, and I completely understand it. And a lot of it is financial. It's financial. Winning games brings in a lot of money. You fill stadiums, you get TV contracts. That's big. And if you can have a high graduation rate and win a lot of games, that's the ideal. And there are places, I believe, that choose and say, hey, you know what? We're going to sacrifice our graduation rate by taking these guys that maybe they're lesser academics kids, but are going to be great football players, as long as we can come up with a graduation rate that is acceptable to us, and maybe that's 75%, which is hard for me to stomach to say 25% of my guys are just not going to graduate. You know, I'm turning them back out to society after I use them for football, and hope they do okay. But I'm moved on. I don't think that's right. But for us here, we look at it. We want to graduate everybody. We want to play great football and turn people back out to society with Stanford degrees. And I tell them their job is to go change the world.
There you go.
That's great.
Hey, David, I'm a big Steeler fan. I got to be honest and ask you, how's my guy DeCastro going to do this year? I mean, he was only, you know, able to play 4 games, extremely injured for the Steelers last year. I think he's a wonderful talent. What can I expect from him, do you think, this coming NFL season as a Steelers fan?
I think you can expect him to be the quintessential Steeler offensive lineman. He's finally healthy. He came back to work out here at Stanford. He feels much better than he did when he left. He's strong. He's surly. He's upset that he missed an entire year. And he's ready to get back out to Pittsburgh and play top-level football.
That's great. Are you able
That's
to stay
great.
In touch with your guys? So, you know, like we said, DeCastro and Andrew Luck and Fleener and Martin and all the guys that are in the NFL, are you able to stay in touch with them and follow their careers and maybe even give them some, you know, advice as they need it, as they're young, you know, professional athletes beginning their careers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All those guys you mentioned and then some have come back and they work out here together. We're doing an addition in our building, and we're creating an NFL locker room within our locker room. For all those guys to come back so they have a place to have their stuff, they have a place to be in the locker room, but it's a little bit separate, it's special just for them. When those guys come back, we talk about things, we text them during the season, we ask them questions, we give them advice still, you know, which I think a lot of people don't think about, but these kids, we've been a part of these young men's lives for 4 and 5 years. We've been the guys that we've depended on. And just because they went to go play in the NFL doesn't mean they have all the answers. Sometimes they have more questions. And a lot of times they'll call us and ask us questions, and sometimes it's not just about football, but about life things that maybe they don't want to ask somebody in their family. And we take that seriously here at Stanford. We continue the mentor relationship even when those guys leave. We call them weekly sometimes. We text them. And when things go well, we give them a, you know, hey, great job. And when things don't go well, we say, hey, you know, you want to talk about it. But that relationship is still strong.
Hey, David, before we let you go, sorry, I've got a bad windstorm out here in Arizona with the technical difficulties. I just want to have a little fun with you real quick. Obviously, with your father being a great Raider, and you talk about Al Davis and you working there and stuff, who's your NFL team, man? Where's your passion? Who do you root for on Sundays?
I root for all the Stanford guys.
Okay.
All the Stanford guys are playing. I love great football. And so, you know, if there's a great game on, I'm going to watch it. If Peyton Manning's on, I'm going to watch it. If Tom Brady's on, Drew Brees is on, if the Ravens' defense is on, those teams that play great football, I get excited when those guys are on. If I have time, I'll definitely watch it. But I'm always rooting for the Stanford guys.
There you go.
That's great. That's great. Well, we think that, you know, you're doing such a great job at Stanford. We'd love for you to stay there and build a program and, you know, stay there for 30, 40 years. Now, you mentioned that you're not interested in going to the NFL. And that, you know, we take you and we respect that. But let me ask you something. In terms of a guy that's coached in the NFL and coached in college, what do you think are the differences for the young coaches out there? You know, everybody thinks of the NFL as the ultimate, you know, pinnacle of coaching, but it's not necessarily the case. It's just a little bit different, right? I mean, what are the differences in terms of, for you as a coach, coaching in the NFL versus coaching in college?
They're very different. The crazy thing is the NFL has all these rule changes for the off season where the coaches have less contact with the players. It's less strenuous. It's for the players' bodies to recover, et cetera. So actually, the college offseason is actually harder than the NFL offseason with recruiting
exactly.
And spring football. And yeah, so it's a lot crazier and busier in the offseason for college football. And NFL football, man, it's bigger, it's flashier. The athletes are better. You know, there's nothing in college football like Monday Night Football, and it's special. And that's great. You get to see the people that are the best in the world at what they do. That's what the NFL is, and that's exciting, and I love that. At the same time, I love that college football feeling, and I love being with these young men, helping them grow, helping them learn, seeing a young man go from a freshman to a sophomore to a fifth-year senior, and go from a guy that you're trying to teach him how to work to 4 years later, he's a team captain, and he's now mentoring younger players. There's nothing like that in the NFL, and that's what's special for me to do it here, to do it at my alma mater, to where this is much more than just football here. It's great football, but it's so much more, and I think it's truly special.
Wow.
That's great. Well, Coach, we don't want to take up any more of your time. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We really respect the work that you're doing, building men and building the program over there in Stanford. We're certainly going to watch you on the NFL Network and watch the coverage. And, it's our pleasure. We'd love to stay in touch, maybe have you on, during the season at some point or before the season when we can squeeze you in. I know your schedule gets very hectic, but this has been great. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. It's been our pleasure.
Thanks so much, Coach Shaw.
All right, take care.
All right. Have fun at the NFL Network, man. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Wow. Incredible, 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 I got to tell you. And that's what it's all about. I mean, you talk about building young men, to become mentors and stuff, and then, like he said, you can't stomach 25% of your guys not graduating. And I feel his passion, and you love the fact that he's a Stanford man, and he wants to turn young men into men. Yeah.
Bill Schembechler said, we want a Michigan guy coaching, right, when he fired Bill Frieder on the spot, and he gave Steve Fisher the job at 89. Said, we want a Michigan man. Well, David Shaw is a Palo Alto, a Stanford man, because he's really – building a program, building some genuinely good football players and great citizens. So good for him.
And I liked how we talked about how, his just recruiting and the type of guys he gets, because off air I was telling you, he gets guys in Texas, Virginia, Louisiana, New York, Arizona. I'm looking at the breakdown. It's not just California. And so to me, that's what you have to do when you're looking for not just athletes, but student athletes at the highest level. And I commend him and, just kudos. And I think it's going to be fun to see them over the years become this football powerhouse. And, to me, it has nothing to do with him just being an African-American head coach, but it's a big deal in Stanford, in college football, because there's so few, and he really just represents as just a great head coach, but at the same time as an African-American head coach. And I'm just, I'm very proud of him, and it's great to see him. We have to laugh, right, because he's around our age. He's younger than us. We're 42, and he's 40. So it's like, Ray and Tay, man, it's right in our alley, man. It's awesome to see. I tell you, I'm sorry, for the listeners. I've had to disappear, but there is a bad windstorm in Arizona, Ray. It's bad.
You okay? Everybody safe?
Yes, it was just shutting me down, So why don't we, before we wrap up the show, give up some quick updates with scores here. Looks like Utah, they're in a nice battle, but Memphis is up 36-31. So that's the main game that matters. I don't know about the Denver score. But, I think we'll see. Lakers will know
Denver's up big. Denver's up big on Phoenix. Denver's up 20 on Phoenix. Denver's up 56-33 on Phoenix. So Denver's taking care of business.
All right, so they got it set. So, listen, we'll give you more NFL draft coverage. Obviously, the draft is the 25th, next Thursday. So we will definitely, do that on Monday and possibly even next Wednesday. But Friday, join us again, and we will be breaking down the NBA playoffs and all the matchups and give the Ray and Tay NBA awards for the season. So it should be fun, man. Great show. And David Shaw.
We'll see you next
Stanford
time. We'll see you on Friday, talking sports with friends. This is Ray and Tay today, and we love having guests on the show. We love having our fans be interactive with us, and we're literally talking sports with friends. So if you've got any comments or thoughts, hit us up. Facebook, Twitter.
Yep, and go to rayandtaytoday.com. Listen to the back episode. And listen to this show with Coach David Shaw at Coach Stanford Cardinals.
When I wake up, I look into the mirror.